the sacred parts then? Okay.
You're in my spot.
Yeah, am I in my right spot? Good, because, man, I've been hiking all day. And got my bear bell, otherwise known as the dinner bell in Grizzly Country. And, yeah, just kind of getting to this campground and, looks like we've got a tent here. Excuse me, miss? Tell you what, just got a couple questions, because I was getting ready to teach a Leave No Trace training, and I just was curious about a couple things in your campground. Mm-hmm. I noticed that you you put your tent right next to this this river that also looks like an LCD projector. And oddly enough, and I don't know if you're familiar with some of the Leave No Trace principles.
No.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not probably your first time out camping or something, but you know, when you're out along a river, oftentimes if you're in bear country, that's where the bears tend to traverse up and down. And I don't know if you're thinking about cooking or anything, but you definitely want to be away from a water source, you know, when you're doing that. Also, is that's not your pack, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Hey, that's a really nice pack.
Thanks.
You know, because I just noticed it was open. You probably didn't notice that.
Well, my food's in there.
Yeah, your food's in there.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Well, I'll tell you what.
Easy access,
right. I think that the raccoons would say the same, actually. Easy access. It might be a good idea to, you know, tie up your food, cinch up the pack. Definitely, you don't have anything in there that smells besides food, do you?
Bug spray and lotion.
Bug spray and lotion. Well, oddly enough, those things bears would come after as well. Other rodents, because they like anything that smells. So, you know, your campsite looks pretty good. Looks like it's packed on a bunch of wildflowers that are probably going to go extinct in about 5 minutes. Other than that, man, you got a good flat site.
Yeah, the most flowers part. Would, you know, act as some nice cushioning.
Yeah, well, I you know, that, we'll check in about that. How about, you know, you want to get set up later on and we'll catch up, but,
all right.
Yeah, just hang loose. We're gonna do a little presentation here.
Sounds good.
Yeah. That's that's love, ladies and gentlemen. This is my fiance Meredith. Only she would put up with such craziness. So, my name is Paul, this is my light. I'm going to turn this off now to conserve energy. But I'm with Sacred Parks, and the Sacred Parks Project aim is to help people internalize the outdoors, their experience in the wilderness in ways that are faithful, both faithful to the principles of Leave No Trace, as we talk about, but also faithful to their Christian faith, or any faith, really, but since we are grounded in the Christian faith, that's what we'll try to make connections to whenever we can. But this is the only presentation of the week where it's almost going to be entirely Leave No Trace, because we're trying to pack an awareness course, a one-hour awareness course, into this hour with a little bit of front-end and back-end. So we'll do as much as we can framing it and try to open up some space, but we are going to do some activity. At the end, we are going to go outside, and so just to give you a heads up, this is my bag. It's definitely not the smallest bag. In hindsight, I wish I would have got a smaller one, for example, I went on an ultralight camping trip in the backcountry in the Grand Canyon. It was called the Fast and Light, and my nickname, because of this bag, was the Big and Slow. So this guy carries a lot of stuff. I'm just going to pull a bunch of camping gear out of here, and don't worry, this is not going to be like an intro to camping class. We don't really have time to go into all the specifics, but we did talk about Meredith's food situation. With her bag, and anybody have any idea what this might be? This is a fancy bear canister.
Yeah.
There's a couple of different types. The one you probably recognize more is the solid black one that's about 1.5 times this size. This is designed to have enough room for about 2.5 to 3 days in the wilderness for one person, maybe 2 days for two people, something like that. This is a cook kit. Inside of it is the fuel for the stove, which is here. This is more or less a ultralight stove. You can get them smaller, but this basically goes on top of a small fuel canister. It's pretty small. And then these are some of the food items, again, tucked away inside the beer canister. These are two full portions. Other things that you might think I would need for a backcountry hike?
Sleeping bag.
We have just such that.
Oh my gosh.
And what else?
Pad. Yes,
sleeping pad. Right there. And not that anyone's going to be sleeping in there, but I just figured I'd put somewhere. Rope, what do you think I might use this for? I would use this to hang my food for sure if I didn't have the bear canister. If for some reason I have trash or something that smells that will not fit in here, what I'll do is I'll take the top of my pack, which is called the brain, and I'll tie it up and tie it in a tree. So I have a carabiner or two. I have something that may come in handy later on. Any idea what this is? The shovel, specifically for number two, and hiking sticks. Anything else that I might have forgotten? I mean,
something for your water.
Something for my water. This is my Camelback, and actually, one thing that I actually did forget was my water purifier. But somewhere in here, I do have a backup tablets, first aid kit, sun hat, and secondary cook kit. Because Meredith's coming along, and some snacks, Clif bars, hand sanitizer, glasses that I've already figured out a way to break because I'm a pro at that.
Do you have a whistle?
I have a whistle. The whistle is on this. Well, it's got sand in it, but speaking of sand, folks that have been coming to the last few days will know that I'm kind of a sucker for the desert. This shirt right here used to be white. This has red sand from the North Rim, the Grand Canyon, permeating it. It does not come out. So the Sacred Classroom of Desert and Mountain, we're trying to sort of weave in the desert, the mountain, and what those mountains like we have here, what places like mountains and deserts, how they can affect us in their extremes. So we'll hopefully weave a little bit of that in. This is basically leaving no trace. This is from a trip in the Galeros Wilderness in Arizona, where I got Leave No Trace Master Educator certified. So for Leave No Trace, there's Master Educator, Trainer, and Awareness. So we're gonna get you the first level if you don't have it already. But this was in the Galeros Wilderness in Arizona. This cactus here is actually about 2 feet tall. But I like the way, or not 2 feet, it's probably about 3 or 4. It's not quite as tall as this guy. But I like the way that the camera makes it look like it's as tall as my colleagues here. And then these are our rations. This was the first time I've ever done non-freeze-dried food. So I haven't been backcountry hiking for too long. I taught myself how to backcountry hike last February. Long story there. This is us doing what? We are weighing our packs. Absolutely. It is so easy to overpack. And I think the general rule was 40 pounds or less. A lot of folks got up to 30. I was rocking like 38, you know, super cool, minus the cool. So this is Sacred Parks. This is our new design for our business card. The reason why, well, what do you see when you see this? Those who haven't been here already. Kathy, you can still say it. What do you see when you see this?
It's a city.
There's a city here.
Cityscape and landscape.
And a cityscape and landscape. So, really, and Leave No Trace in their booklets tap into this, like, really, really well. Essentially, the Leave No Trace principles are applicable anywhere. And we hope that, Sacred Parks hopes that the faith principles that are tied into the ecological principles, you can use in your daily life all throughout. So the ethics and the skills that you have when you go out into the backcountry, if you're literally carrying everything on your back, or if you're going on a day hike, those types of skills and awarenesses, if we use those in our daily life, we can actually take better care of the planet from a different perspective. Not a perspective of fear, like, oh, the world is going to end, or, oh, the temperature is going to go skyrocket. Those things might happen, but fear is a much worse motivator than love. And so trying to connect the wildernesses of the city, for people who live here, the city is the wilderness, and vice versa, is really the mission. And so we have a new tagline, Becoming Faithful Stewards Beyond Park Borders. We talked about faith and nature. Faith, nature, and sustainability are the three poles, if you will, that we try to connect. We talked about what is Sacred Parks and why do you care the last couple of days. Today we are strictly focusing on what we're going to do about it. And that is tying right into the Leave No Trace principles. But before we do that, we have a many-colored desert mountain moment from the book that we're looking at. And whoever, I think I have enough for everybody, but if you're interested, we're looking at chapter 2 and its add-on tomorrow. So is everyone interested? I mean, this is part of the desert mountain moment. You could read this tonight or all day tomorrow or not, whichever, if you don't have time. But this is what we're going to look at tomorrow from the book. The book is available in the bookstore. Okay. Book is available in the bookstore. Here, you want one? So you can get the whole thing. It's an amazing book.
What's the name of the book?
The Solace of Fierce Lansing. I have an extra copy here. I'll give you a really good deal on it if you want it. Because that's not from the bookstore. I shouldn't do that. I'll give you the same price. But it'll be a good deal. Anyway, I'm new to this. Sorry. This is the first time I've peddled the book. This is a really awesome book. This author has, he's used an experience of grieving, the anticipatory grief of waiting for his mother to die who has terminal cancer. So he's used this long protracted experience and his experience of being in the desert and the mountains. So it's, the subtitle is Exploring Desert and Mountain Spirituality. And he'll also weave in stories from the ancient Christian and other religions, but mostly Christian monks, people living out in the desert. And it really makes living in the outdoors, here's a tie in to Leave No Trace, it really makes living in the outdoors come to life because it ties into the total person. So this particular chapter is really good. They're all good. So anyway, the quote that I wanted to read from you is very short. It says, did I get to the wrong page? We have learned, wait a minute, sorry, I'm hiccuping for a second. Okay, God is a desert whose fullness of glory is hidden from human sight, known only in an unknowing and risking of love. The self is a desert that must be stripped and made empty before God can be found at its center. The realization of God's love at the heart of one's being is inseparably related to ascetical and liturgical performances, which are themselves suggested by desert experience. So he's really big on ritual, and as we are. How does ritual make something sacred? How does the place, how does your state of mind, how do all these things make something sacred? Okay. What are we going to do about it? Leave no trace. Okay, these are the seven principles. Okay, these are the seven what they call front country principles. Any idea what I might mean by front country?
You can drive into your site.
Exactly. Front country is something that you can drive to, like we were simulating here, like a car camping site maybe. But Fern Country actually is casts a much wider net. That's why it connects so well to the sacred park, because Fern Country could mean walking down the street in the city. Fern Country could mean your backpack trip to Heart Lake. It's essentially everything that you plan on coming back to that day, more or less. So backcountry, they have 7 principles that mirror these. They just have slightly different wording. So we'll go through the front country ones, and if you have any questions about what that front country might look like in the backcountry, just raise your hand. Before, we're just going to do a brief overview. Leave no trace. Do you recognize any of these? I know it's kind of they're kind of small. Any of these emblems? Okay, this is the National Outdoor Leadership School. That's the Department of the Interior Bureau of Land Management. There's no way you could read that if you didn't know what that was. It's just too small. This is the Forest Service, exactly.
National Park Service.
And then this is kind of a random one. I didn't recognize it. Yeah, Fish and Wildlife, U.S. Fish and Wildlife. So these 4 federal bureaus are the ones that manage like 99% of the federal land. I mean, there's other smaller ones. But what happened in, okay, so these are the 4. What happened in 1993 is that 3 of them came to, I guess all of them actually, no, 3 of them with Knowles, came to Knowles and they said, you know what, we like your no trace, before leaving, we like your no trace stuff. We want to figure out a way to have a universal education platform for all of the federal lands. It's going to take it out of our hands. You guys, you can market it. You can do be creative as you want, but we have to have something that makes sense for all of them, and that people can kind of catch on to. And it needs to be voluntary. Like this is not like the ranger coming in and telling you you have to do this. This is what keeps nature as pristine as possible. It was actually a really smart move, and it's really caught on. By 2002. Leave No Trace Center for Outdoor Ethics was established. And from here on out, there's only a couple of schools. Knowles is one. I think there's one in Appalachian Territory that will run these the Master Educator courses. But trainer courses you can find in any state. If you go onto the Leave No Trace website, lnt.org, you can become a trainer. You can do some of this stuff online. But for the trainer courses and the Master Educator courses, you have to go into the backcountry, at least for the master educator. The trainer, I think maybe you can do some car camping or whatever, but you have to spend several days for both of these to really internalize them and use them. So, the mission of LNT, Center for Outdoor Ethics, promote and inspire responsible outdoor recreation through education, research, and partnerships. Okay. Mission of Sacred Parks is faithfully exploring living simply in community with our nation's parks. A little bit of familiarity there, a lot of crossover. So, the first one, any idea what this might be? Know before you go. Plan ahead and prepare. You don't want to be in the car already thinking about what you left behind, which is a movie that I've started in a few times. Mm-hmm. This is me purifying water along Redwood Creek in Redwood National Park. That's the water filter that I forgot to bring today. So know before you go, plan ahead and prepare. So here are the backcountry equivalents in green. So if you're curious, all of them have something very similar. Plan ahead and prepare. Be prepared. Remember food and water and clothes to protect you from cold, heat, and rain. I found that clothes take up the least amount of space in your backcountry pack. I mean, everything else is way more important in as far as weight goes, but you have to have a change of clothes in case you get wet and cold. Use maps to plan where you're going. I brought my maps here somewhere of Chelan and Holden. Topo maps. You really can't get by with some of the smaller maps of the National Park. Those are meant for day hikes. Any other things that might be helpful? Finding a compass, definitely a compass. It's GPS, yes. And the GPS, I have mixed feelings about. A lot of people in the Leave No Trace do as well, but you kind of have to have it. I mean, if not as your primary, but definitely as a secondary. The GPS, you're kind of a victim of batteries, and it doesn't always have everything correct, but at least it will give you a longitude and latitude coordinate that you can match up against the sides of your topo map, at the very least. This is why this is front country. Remember to bring a leash for your pet and plastic bags to pick up your pet's waste. Okay. Learn about the areas you plan to visit, read books, check online, and talk to people before you go. The more you know, the more fun you have. I used to think the less I knew, the more fun I'd have. Why would I think something like that? It's more adventurous, right? But I have to tell you, you're going to have enough adventure no matter how much you know. And we had a case in point. We're on the bus from Wenatchee to Chelan, and we were asking about the trail because we wanted to hike in from Stehekin. And we talked to a few people, and they're like, Cloudy Pass, not passable. And we corroborated that with a couple other people, with the ranger, and we actually, the next day, we're glad that we made the decision to just chill in Stehekin and camp, more or less like, it was like a car camp, but we hiked half a mile to get there. But we saw a group of seven guys that went all the way down a Cloudy Pass, and then had to come all the way back. They had to hike 20 miles in one day just to get back on time. And that is because they probably didn't check in. You know, they had a lot of equipment. They didn't have the right gear on their feet. They didn't have crampons. They didn't have gaiters. They didn't have ice axes. And they had to turn around. So this know before you go is so important. I mean, there are some things you can fudge on and some things that you can't. And especially in the backcountry. And the other day we went hiking to Monkey Bear, and I only had a half full camelback, and we took a wrong turn. Instead of going to 10 Mile Falls, we went to Monkey Bear, and suddenly we are hiking back the last half mile with no water. That was not a life-threatening situation, but I vowed years ago never to do that, and I didn't bring my water purifier. Almost paid for it. This next one, any idea what this one might be? Camping?
In the state park.
Yeah, camping on durable surfaces, camping overnight, right. So this is the front country principle, again, for car camping, more or less. Walk and ride on designated trails to protect trailside plants. So bushwhacking, not recommended. There are some, and it's actually sometimes illegal. There are some parks that don't care. And these are usually the parks that are very remote and not well travel, like Yellowstone. You can't just hike wherever you want. You wouldn't want to anyway, because the ground's unstable. But Channel Islands National Park, they have a policy, you can hike anywhere you want, because they only have probably 20 people on the island on one day. Do not step on flowers or small trees. Once damaged, they may never go back. Yeah, in the desert, there's what they call cryptobiotic soil. And if you just step on it, it's done. If you touch it, it's dead. Forever. So there are some things that never grow back. Most plants will, but if you pick that only flower, or you put your tent on top of put your tent on top of those only species, then, you know, who knows. Camp only on existing or designated campsites to avoid damaging vegetation. Campsites are found, not made. I mean, people kind of go back and forth on this, but if you're in the backcountry and you see an area that would fit your tent, some people say, camp on that. I would say camp on that. This says camp on that. Other people say, well, that place is getting worn down. Try to wear down another, less. Really, when it comes to tents and camping, I think you should always camp on a place that's been camped before. You know, try to, you know, put some more leaves on it or whatever to keep it from getting worn down more. But camping takes its toll. You know, a tent takes its toll. Same thing with trails. If you're walking in backcountry trails that were areas where it's okay to go where trails are not, if you have like five people, do you walk in one line, all five of you, or do you spread out? True, false, or... Maybe.
In one line.
That's the logical thing. You walk in one line because that's where we're treading down less space. But actually what they want you to do is to spread out, because 5 footprints in that same area are going to pack that brush down more than one.
If there's no designated trail.
Exactly. So don't dig trenches or build structures in your campsite. You know, this sounds like a no-brainer, but, you know, when people want to dry out their tents or whatever, you know, they tie ropes around trees, and if it's anything's heavy at all, if you do that, you want to cushion that rope. I mean, you want to tie like a, something, you know, a shirt or whatever to keep that rope from ripping into the bark. This one, cheating a little bit on this one. This is actually from one of the Hiking by Faith outings we did, where we did some hiking, but we also did some cleanup in a forest preserve outside of Chicago. So this is us holding up all the trash that we picked up. There's a lot of trash in that forest preserve. This is us packing, trashing your trash and picking up poop. I love that. The backcountry version, dispose of waste properly. Pack it in, pack it out. You've probably heard that. Pack out what you pack in. So many people think, you know, I went and did a number 2 in the backwoods and I buried the poop and I buried the toilet paper. The toilet paper will break down, right? Well, yes, but it might take a long time. If something washes over that could end up downstream. The toilet paper has to get packed out in a bag with your stuff, away from everything else, of course. Even crumbs, peels and cores, like if you have like a banana, people think, oh, I'll toss the banana peel, it'll be biodegradable. Yeah, in like 2 years it is, you know. And then you have the problem of pests, you know, getting into, you know, areas and wildlife. Use bathrooms or outhouses when available. If not, bury human waste in a small hole. Does everyone here know how to dig a cat hole? With probably your own? Because when we go outside, I'll dig one, just so you see how that is. You want to do 6 to 8 inches deep and 200 feet or 70 big steps from water. Use a plastic bag to pack out your pet's poop, or in the backcountry, your own. And you want to keep water clean, so don't put soap, food, or human or pet waste in lakes or streams. I mean, you see it all the time when, like, you're in a car camping site next to a river or whatever. People wash their pots and pans out in the water because they just dump the pan in there. Like, that water's going downstream. Problem with that is that now bears and everything else are going to smell that, and they're going to start searching for food, and they're going to go where they see people. I mean, it's, yeah, it's cascading effect. So you, if you have to, you scatter soap and dishwater from your pans, and pack everything out. Any idea what this might be? This is in the woods in Congaree National Park, formerly known Congaree Swamp National Park in South Carolina. Anybody? Don't worry, I don't either. I didn't know what this was. I saw this off the trail, and this is clearly some like metal canister that was like older than I am. This is also on that trail, and there's a Boy Scout troop who's carved somehow their initials into this bridge. It looks so good that you think, oh man, they must have had permission, or maybe they helped buy that thing. But my guess is they probably just know how to do that. So you don't want to be doing that, of course. Carving, hacking, or peeling plants or wood is not good. Historical items. Anybody know what I mean by that?
An arrowhead or something.
An arrowhead? Yeah. If you see an arrowhead in the trail, is it finders keepers? What about this thing right here? If this thing was small, it looks kind of like trash, and I do pick up trash when I can and put it in my pack and carry it out. Let's say this was an old can from the 1950s. Is that fair game?
What do you say? I would want to pick it up. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you probably wouldn't want to pick it up too. I mean, What anything that is 50 years or older is a historical item. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be like an old saw that's stuck in a tree and looks unsightly. It's a historical item. It's a federal offense to actually remove something 50 years or older on federal land. So that was kind of a new one for me. So leave plants, rocks, and historical items as you find them so others can enjoy them. I really enjoyed that. It was really nice to look at. I could not for the life of me find a picture of campfires or fires. I have a bunch of pictures on my laptop from my trips. That's probably because I don't make fire very often. So they also talk about stoves. Any idea why I would have a picture of stoves about when we're talking about campfires?
Well, if you have a campfire, then you need to have wood.
Correct.
And if you don't have a whole lot of wood around, then maybe people will start coming down or tearing off branches.
Right. I mean, a lot of people want to completely rough it, build a fire, bring aluminum foil and pans, and cook right there. Unless the Park Service or the Rangers, Visitor Center, or whatever, unless they say that's okay, this is a way to do it, a stove. They say use a camp stove for cooking. They're easier to cook on. They're faster. They create less impact. If you want to have a campfire and you're able to, be sure it's permitted. Be sure it's safe to build a fire in the area you're visiting. Use only existing fire rings. Keep your fire small. If you're in the backcountry and you don't have a fire ring, you need to make one with rocks. This is another one. It's kind of like cleaning your pots and pans in the water. Like, hey, I have a fire, so all of my, leftover bag, my toilet paper, I just throw that in and burn it, right? It's done. Problem with that is it creates odors, and if it doesn't burn completely, it's now a target for somebody, an animal that wants to make that its food. Before gathering any firewood, check local regulations. Burn all wood to ash and be sure the fire is completely out and cold. I would say even before you go to sleep, not just before you leave, but before you go to sleep. A couple times I've not let the fire burn completely, or I've not poured enough water on that coals, and I've been in my tent sleeping, and I hear, and I wake up, and I'm like, there's a full fire. It's like some weird like science fiction movie. But all it takes is like one piece of paper that's at the bottom of the fire, and once the fire finds that, the embers, it'll start it up again. So you want to spread out the coals and embers, and then pour water on it if you can. We use snow at Heart Lake because there's still snow. We were not wanting to go to the lake to pick up the water. This is one of my favorites. I took this picture. This is in Waterton Lake National Park, just north of Glacier. So this is in Canada. Canadians have some funny signs, let me tell you. This is a sign that obviously you can tell, like, hey, you mess with the wildlife, you're going to get bucked, literally. And that does happen. I just thought it was, I've never seen a sign like this in the States. So this is Keep Wildlife Wild. Respect wildlife. Observing wildlife from a distance and never approaching, feeding, or following them. I'm shocked in Holden that people don't try to go up and pet the deer. I'm so glad they don't, but they're like right there. Mm-hmm. Chipmunks, well, yeah, and Meredith was telling me that, Meredith was saying that Jenny Willis, in her presentation, yes, said that the chipmunks carry fleas that have been known to carry the bubonic plague.
Yes.
And so, they look cute. You obviously don't want them to bite you, but you don't even want them to brush up against your skin. I mean, it's just, there's a reason why the wild are wild. Human food is unhealthy for all wildlife, and feeding them starts bad habits. We all probably know that, but why is that true?
Because it spikes the population, and then you cannot sustain enough food to have die off.
Right, Right, because say the bears or the deer, they get used to our focaccia bread at Holden. Then they come back, and then the more they know the food is here, the less fear they have. And the less fear they have, the more likely they're going to challenge us for that food that they know will be here. And then what's going to happen is somebody's going to get hurt or worse, and the bear's going to have to get put down. So when they say a fed bear is a dead bear, that's true. And it really could apply to just about any wildlife. So those bad habits. I don't know, has anybody here been to Yosemite? Okay, so you know, the black bears at Yosemite are like ninjas. They can get in and out of a car with their fingernail. They can peel down the windows. They'll see a cooler, and just the cooler. Even if there's no food, they'll see it, and they'll go through it through their window. They're so acclimated to food that you can't even put all your food in your trunk and then go to your hotel room if you're in a hotel or your campsite. They actually make the people that stay in the hotel, not just the campers, they make the people that stay in the hotels put their food, drive over to a different spot, put their food in the metal bear canisters, and drive back to the parking lot. Or just take their food in to their hotel room. It's crazy. But it's like clockwork. They're going to get into your car. That's the worst place that I've ever encountered, wildlife being so obnoxious. Other parks, like very remote places, bears don't even want anything to do with you. By nature, they really don't. But, you know, when you challenge them, surprise them, or threaten them, or have ready-made food, you are no longer keeping the wildlife wild or respecting them. I think we're doing pretty well on time. So one of the things that I did when, because this was my gig when I went through Master Educator, I had to do like a half-hour presentation to my colleagues on keeping the wildlife wild. And what I did was I had everybody bring their pack, and like a loaded pack. So we had like 12 people in a circle with their packs loaded. And I said, okay, in order to conceptualizing respecting wildlife, we need to conceptualize what it's like to be in relationship with them. And relationship with wildlife is one of those relationships where you have clear boundaries. Okay. Well, let's just think about relationship to an object that you would not think of otherwise, and let's take your backpack. So we went around the circle, and I said, tell a story about your backpack as if that backpack is a trusted friend. And most people, it was, because they had used this pack for trips and many, many trips and whatnot. I was shocked. I thought people were going to think this was really dumb. There was a guy who was like 65, Boy Scout leader, for 30 years, and he talked for 5 minutes about his pack. I mean, I almost had to tell him, you know. He was like, you went to the Grand Canyon with me, and we had a tough time, and I ripped you, and then I had to get this, but you know, you've stood the test of time, and blah, 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 and I'm just like, holy smokes, Walter, you know, come on. But it was effective in the sense that now I say, okay, now look at that. Now when you see that deer 100 yards away, what are you saying to that deer in your mind? Like, hey, you know, I insert dialogue here, but now I'm going to respect it because I have a relationship with it. And the average person does not think of talking to a bear or, in some cases, talking to a black bear, you know, is a good thing because they know you're coming. You know, grizzly, not a good thing. But in other ways, just a sacred place, a sacred park, a sacred place, if you've conceptualized it as having a relationship to it, almost like you're taking it like your backpack and saying, Holden Village, I came to you when I was really having a tough time in 87 and blah, blah, blah. If you start doing that, then the respect is a no-brainer. It's automatic. Last one. I couldn't find any pictures of dogs on my laptop, so I had to go with some cheesy clip art. Share our trails and manage your pet. Most folks will say, you know what, if you're going to the park, leave your pet at home. I mean, it's so much trouble, it's debatable whether the pet's even going to enjoy it. I mean, wildlife see pets as threats. It limits what you can do. It's, yeah. But if you're going to bring your pet, be considerate when passing others on the trail, whether you have a pet or not, but keep your pet under control and protected, other visitors and wildlife. Listen to nature. So this really plugs into what we're trying to do at Sacred Parks. It's like, slow down. Like, even I, in all these trips, I realized that I was trying to see as many sites as possible. Like, oh, I've got to see Half Dome. Oh, I've got to see Tuolumne Meadows. Oh, I've, you know, it's like, I'm not even enjoying this. You know, listen to nature. Slow down. Don't make loud noises, you know, unless you're in grizzly country and you want to announce yourself. You'll see more wildlife if you're quiet. And you just drink it in. Be sure the fun you have outdoors does not bother anyone else. I'm sure we all have stories about the time we were trying to catch some sleep, and the doofuses in the campsite next to you were drinking all night. Like, that's why there's quiet hours. You know, like, that's why the experience is better when you're allowing other people to enjoy it. The last anecdote I have, because we want to go outside here in a couple minutes, is when I was in Denali, a buddy of mine and I went to Alaska last summer on one of these trips, and we hiked on top of this false summit on a mountain, and we moved our tent after we were a couple miles away from it, because we saw that from the bottom of the plains up into the mountain, we could see the blue of my blue and orange tent, and we're like, you know what, that's not cool, because other people consider this to be completely wild country, so we moved it a little bit, so that only the orange was showing, and the orange blended in with the orange of the hillside, of the mountainside. So you don't think about that, and you're like, yeah, who cares, you know, we're out in the middle of nowhere, there's nobody else here, but it's the perception that you are in the wilderness, that you don't want to set up camp and in the backcountry, in a spot that is, like, really noticeable.
Should you have colorful tents?
Oh, you know, that's yeah. Colorful tents are good if you're, you know, like, this tent's not a very good example, because it blends in with just about everything. But I guess in some ways, having a colorful tent, especially if you're winter camping, you know, so it stands out, you know, if you need to be rescued or whatever.
Just not a picture.
Yeah, I mean, there's some gray area, because, you know, we talked about, you know, do we put this on a well-established spot or not? But a lot of times it's intuition. Like, if it's right there by the side of the road, it's like, they don't want you to do that. So what I want to do is we've gone through all the principles. I would like to take the next 10 minutes-ish to... invite you to come together. We don't need to split up because we don't have too many folks. And I have these booklets that Holden has in the hike house. I'll give one to you. There was another one here. And I want you to get together and figure out which principle you want to teach me. And we'll go outside to do that.